So on the front lines of neuroscience, and neuroscience has really advanced with developments in chemistry, microbiology, the ability to really understand the architecture of the brain, as well as the proliferation of computer science, which allows enormous amounts of data to be analyzed and actually simulate brain processes. Neuroscience is undergoing an extraordinary renaissance right now. Actually, it's the creation of the science itself. In the studio with me is New York Times science writer Ben Carey to talk about the possibility that one of the really important breakthroughs in neuroscience that we're actually witnessing at this moment is an ability to use drugs to actually manage files in the brain, manage your memory in the brain, either by eliminating selectively bad memories or enhancing your ability to remember. First of all, Ben, welcome.
Thanks very much.
And this sounds kind of, like a science fiction, but in fact, there is enough understanding of how the brain works to actually target memory centers of the brain. What is the chemistry that has suddenly suggested an actual pharmacological therapy?
Well, the first thing to say about this is there are no drugs to do the editing just yet, and there's ways to go to understand exactly how to do that. But there's some good progress being made on several fronts. I wrote a story today which focused on one of those, a team in Brooklyn that's found a molecule which is active and seems to be very important for preserving or maintaining memories, all sorts of memories. And so when you interfere with that or you block the molecule, this is an animal work, the memories wash out. That suggests a whole range of things that could be possible. Now, it's a ways to go, of course, before you develop something like that into a drug.
But the interesting thing is that aside from simply the presence of this molecule, there seems to be an understanding of what it's actually doing, that in a sense, memories, particularly strong memories, are associated with neurons creating a sort of speed dial list for nearby neurons or groups of neurons, and that memories consist of a kind of a Facebook friend list of neurons that's established by experiences and then is difficult to break.
Yeah, that's a great metaphor for it. I think, the basic cell biology of memory, of just one cell communicating and to another and that neighboring cell or downstream cell preserving this memory has been around for a while. and by looking at that model, they've been able to develop some ideas of what's happening with the molecules when one stimulates a memory in another. And the way I see it, of course, memories are not just made up of two neurons or two cells, but a whole network of them. You sort of mentioned this Facebook idea. I sort of imagine one of these Christmas light displays where there are different traces going off and that each one of those is a kind of memory. And so what the researchers are trying to do, and they seem to be getting some traction, is to find out what's happening in the individual cells that keeps that whole network linked and sensitive to messages going through it. So that's the idea.
Well, Hollywood, of course, is way ahead of you here. Take a listen to this.
Why remember a destructive love affair? Here at Lacuna, we have perfected a safe, effective technique for the focused erasure of troubling memories. In a matter of hours, a patented, non-surgical procedure will rid you of painful memories and allow you a new and lasting peace of mind you'd never imagined possible.
Now that's from the 2004 movie Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, actor Tom Wilkinson, suggesting that there's maybe a kind of, longing among people to actually have this kind of control over their brain if tools and therapies emerge from these exciting developments that you're talking about in the laboratory. What are the sort of ethical, social questions that we need to be concerned about?
Well, there are several. You can see where, from that clip, that there'd be a temptation to erase all sorts of painful memories. One of the disorders that is a particular target for this kind of thing is traumatic memories, sort of horrible memories that stalk people, that hang around, that are disabling. And that would be a therapeutic use. You try to blunt those memories and help them out, help them deal with the problem. However, in the clip, they're really talking about a memory that is more a part of life experience. It's painful, but it's perhaps something we learn from. Nonetheless, there'll be a temptation, I think, to erase those kinds of memories of breakups, memories when you've done bad things, even memories of crimes, for that matter. So wide availability of a drug like that would have this potential misuse. Yeah.
Is it possible that, I mean, I can imagine an application for a drug like this for people who experience trauma in war. And the upside would be that you prevent the disabling effects of really powerful, brutal memories. But there's also the argument that, well, if you blunt the intensity of war, the brutality of war, you actually eliminate an argument against it. You make it more likely that people will enter into war because the pain is dulled to a certain extent.
That's right. So you might in effect, blunt or soften this collective memory of war, for that matter, the collective memory of many traumatic things. You might even argue that, for example, if a drug like this was used to wash out some cues and memories of addiction, that people might be tempted to, you know, to experiment more with drugs. So there is, of course, value in our memories, and so sort of starting to tinker with them has potential downsides that, you know, we don't even know yet, I think.
What about the restorative side? Is there anything in this research that suggests that memory can be recreated or retained in, say, for instance, an Alzheimer's patient where it's obviously deteriorating at a rate that, has severe psychological implications?
Well, that's the great hope. That's the big kahuna here, is that we can slow down age-related memory decline or treat or delay the onset of Alzheimer's disease. And, of course, I think everybody in this game, all the researchers who are working on this, are absolutely hopeful and optimistic and determined to make an impact with this research. And so, yes, I mean, that's the goal. That's really the biggest target of all.
And there's an enormous amount of money behind this research, true?
Yes, according to the Society for Neuroscience, the NIH spent more than $5 billion, about 20% of its budget last year. I believe that was last year's figures on brain-related projects. That's the whole ton of money. And I think that part of this is due to the fact that, one thing is that these disorders of memory are big and getting bigger. More and more numbers of people are getting them as the population ages. But also, young people become excited about this field because it's still somewhat wide open. We're impressed by some of these findings, but there's just whole areas of the brain that are still dark, still waiting to be discovered. where a young person can you don't have to be young, but
right.
Anybody
it's not
in
old
the field.
Science. It's the beginning
it's
of the
science.
Frontier.
That's right.
Yeah,
right.
Ben Carey, New York Times science writer, talking about new therapies to restore and or selectively edit memory in the brain.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.